You're listening to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Ari Snyder, joined by Maine Public's chief political correspondent Steve Missler and State House correspondent Kevin Miller. Steve and Kevin, there is so much news coming out of Washington, D.C. right now as the Trump administration keeps up this frenetic pace of layoffs, funding cuts, and other changes. Many of those will obviously impact Maine, which I'd like to talk about a bit later. But first, I want to ask about this lawsuit over Maine's new 3-day waiting period on gun purchases. In your Political Pulse newsletter this week, you suggest that this case could have national ramifications. Kevin, can you explain why?
Yeah, thanks, Ari. So last week, the top federal judge in Maine's district court, Lance Walker, he suspended the state's 3-day waiting period on gun buyers. This was just a preliminary ruling, but the judge agreed with several gun dealers and a self-defense instructor that the law indiscriminately forces everybody to wait these 3 days or 72 hours to pick up their new firearms. And that's even if they've passed a background check and they're not showing any signs of mental distress or anger. And the reason we say this could have national implications is because this is the first time a district court, a federal district court judge, has come down on the side of Second Amendment defenders in a lawsuit over waiting periods, at least since this legal landscape has changed around guns a few years ago. David Trahan, who's with the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine, was almost giddy after this ruling the other day.
We have the funding to go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And if that happens, this will get settled for over 20 states. And if it gets, I guess, reinforced at the Supreme Court level, all of those laws will then be null and void. This could create precedent for the next 100 years on whether waiting periods are constitutional.
Now, Maine's Attorney General Aaron Frey has appealed the judge's ruling, so it's now headed to the federal appellate court in Boston.
So I understand that Maine is one of more than a dozen states that have these waiting period laws, and some of those laws have been upheld by the courts in the past. So what changed here?
Right. So as I mentioned, the legal landscape around gun regulations changed 3 years ago, and that's when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in a case known as Bruin. Bruin dealt with New York State's very restrictive concealed carry laws, but when the conservatives on the court struck down parts of that New York law, they also created this whole new legal standard by essentially saying that any new gun regulations should have some historical precedent or analog. Now, as you said, waiting periods have been upheld as constitutional many times before in the past because they're viewed as public safety measures, especially when it deals with potentially preventing suicides, because they impose a cooling off period before you can go home with a gun. But most of those cases happened before Bruin. But I spoke with Billy Clark, who's with Giffords Law Center, which is one of the big legal groups that defends gun control. And he pointed out that other federal judges have upheld waiting period laws in Vermont and Colorado and in New Mexico. And all of those happened since the Bruin case.
These really are effective means of reducing impulsive gun violence. You know, we are confident that this law will be upheld, that, you know, this is an outlier decision and that nothing in the Bruin decision commands this result.
So I guess, you know, we'll see what happens when this gets to the appellate court.
Steve, you've covered these gun policy debates here in Maine, but there are national groups getting involved in this fight over Maine's law now. Why is that?
Well, Ari, it's not uncommon for national groups to get involved in court battles over laws that they have a stake in. You know, after all, the adoption of waiting period laws, or fighting them, is a process that begins in state legislatures and often ends in court, and these groups are usually along for both rides. But what's also interesting about this case is that one of the attorneys working for the gun rights side here is Paul Clement. He's the same attorney who prevailed in the landmark Bruin case that Kevin was just talking about. So his involvement here underscores this hope among plaintiffs that this case has the potential to reach the high court.
Turning now to the Trump administration's controversial actions, Steve, many Republicans in Congress have strongly supported the president's agenda of cutting government spending and slashing federal jobs. That is, until it hits close to home for them.
Yes, the cuts for thee, but not for me. That seems to be the theme from the GOP-controlled Congress as Elon Musk rampages through the federal bureaucracy and the Trump administration freezes funds and slashes federal jobs. But what's interesting here is that Republicans could assert their power of the purse and control of Congress to slow this down, but doing that would provoke a confrontation with Trump and they're just unwilling to do that. So instead, it looks like they've resorted to begging the Trump administration to stay the axe in their respective states. So that's been true in Maine, as Republican Senator Susan Collins, who's the chair of the Senate Budget Writing Committee, writes letters to preserve jobs at the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard or unfreeze research grants from the National Institute of Health. And it's been true of Republican members of Congress all over the country, whether it's NIH grants in Alabama or crops in Kansas that were supposed to go to impoverished countries but are now rotting somewhere because Musk put the USAID agency in the so-called wood chipper. And Ari, Trump has demonstrated that he's a transactional president, so one has to wonder what these politicians might be asked to deliver if they can actually convince him to reopen the funding spigot in their state.
Kevin, what's the latest from the rest of Maine's congressional delegation? How are they responding to Trump and Elon Musk's aggressive agenda?
So we're really seeing a kind of a spectrum of reactions. Democratic Congresswoman Shelley Pinkery, who leans the furthest left in our delegation, she's been extremely critical of pretty much everything Trump and his team have been doing from the beginning. But Independent Senator Angus King has really ramped up his tone over the past few weeks and has delivered several kind of scathing floor speeches now, including one where he said that, we're in the middle of a constitutional crisis. But then we have Congressman Jared Golden. He's a Democrat representing Maine's conservative 2nd District. Congressman Golden says he has concerns, but then he says critics need to respond with, quote, composure in the face of chaos. And as we've seen with Congressman Golden before, you know, he says the Democratic Party really needs to look in the mirror at why they lost so badly in November and not have just automatic knee-jerk reactions to things like spending cuts and government reforms that he says probably many Americans would support. But then lastly, he says that while he opposes some of Trump's moves, he points out that the court process is working now, even though it's kind of slow.
Sticking with reaction to Trump's agenda, a poll came out this week suggesting that Mainers are more than just divided on the president's job performance. What's going on there?
Yeah, I think it's pretty astonishing. 98% of Republicans think Trump is doing a good job, and 98% of Democrats don't think he's doing a good job. In my couple of decades now, reading polls and paying attention to politics, I can't think of another time when you have 98% of a group of voters feeling one way. I mean, can you even think of a topic where if you get several hundred Mainers together in a big room, 98% of them would agree on anything? Like, I don't even think the Red Sox would come that close.
Yeah, just a couple of things struck me about this survey, Ari. You know, first, as Kevin mentioned, is this near unanimity of approval by the GOP is obviously stunning, even compared to Republicans in other New England states. It's not quite that rosy in some of the other surveys in Vermont and New Hampshire, which the UNH Survey Center also polled those states. But the other thing that was striking to me here is that independents, who determine a lot of elections in this state, are mostly unimpressed with the president's executive actions. And the same goes for Musk to an even starker degree. I think there's a general discomfort with a billionaire rummaging through the people's private information and then completely misrepresenting it, as he did when he suggested last week that millions of dead people were getting Social Security payments. It turns out he didn't really know how to read the data he had been given access to. But, you know, Republicans don't seem to have a problem with it, Musk that is, but a lot of other people do.
And finally, Republican State Representative Laurel Libby plowed headlong into the debate over transgender women participating in girls and women's sports by sharing a photo of a high school athlete who won an event at a track state championship. Steve, what's the latest there?
Yeah, so the issue of transgender women participating in women's sports has been a crusade for conservatives for a few years now. And President Trump has also made it an issue by threatening to withhold federal funds from states that don't outlaw it. It's an issue that reasonable people can disagree on, but what Representative Libby did this week took it to another place. She posted a photo from a high school track meet and identified a teenager as a trans athlete. The photo blurred the faces of the girls on the podium, but not the athlete Libby wanted to draw attention to. And that's drawn a lot of blowback from people who don't think it's appropriate to insert kids into political debates and the online harassment that typically comes with it. And as it turns out, this photo is all over the place now in the conservative media ecosystem. It's shared by a lot of right-wing influencers. But for what it's worth, Libby is unapologetic and has basically declined to take down the photo and really is just taking aim at the Maine Principals Association for allowing this athlete to even participate in the event last week.
Yeah, Ari, this is Kevin, and I'll just add here that this could have real impacts on Maine because during comments yesterday evening, President Trump indicated that if Maine didn't change its policy, the federal government might cut off funding to education programs in Maine. So that's a huge threat, and we're seeing a lot of reaction to that today from politicians in Maine, including from the governor, who said that if the president attempted to carry out that threat and to cut off federal funding, state would take all appropriate and necessary legal action to restore that funding. And she added that the state of Maine, quote, will not be intimidated by the president's threats.
And that was Maine Public's chief political correspondent Steve Missler and State House correspondent Kevin Miller. Thanks for joining us for Maine Public's Political Pulse. You can also read the Political Pulse newsletter. Find it online at mainepublic.org/pulse. Our music is by Rob Holt. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon on Maine's Political Pulse.